The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life, drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Tonight we're going to be talking to the Design Whisperer, Lindsay Duff. This is really fascinating because she goes beyond interior design and feng shui by connecting to the energy that is you. I personally think that this information is exactly what you've been waiting for and something that's going to make you fall in love with your immediate environment again and again. And then, after Lindsay, we're going to be talking to Mr. Thomas J. Carey, a frequent guest on Coast to Coast Radio, about his new book called Inside the Real Area 51. Yep, it's all about the documentation surrounding Roswell and aliens. Really, really interesting stuff tonight. And you may ask, what does this have to do with the Law of Attraction? Well, truthfully, didn't you want to hear about all this? You attracted this information to you right now. So sit back, relax, tune in, and let's chat with the authentic design whisperer, Miss Lindsay Duff and Thomas Carey about the Roswell cover-up. We'll be right back after these words.
Hi, I'm Sue Elliott, editor-in-chief of Law of Attraction magazine. I would love to introduce you to the magazine so you can manifest the life of your dreams. You'll find powerful wisdom, insights, and easy techniques inside every issue of Law of Attraction magazine. And it's available right now, digitally and on most newsstands. Visit lawofattractionmag.com to purchase your online copy today. That's Law of Attraction, MAG.com.
Law of Attraction magazine is not associated with Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Jules of Law of Attraction Talk Radio and CEO of Law of Attraction Radio Network. On previous shows, I have talked to my listeners about the importance of decalcifying the pineal gland that affects our ability to create. Now there is an easy way to assist the pineal gland to heal through high-frequency music. And I want everybody to know about CodeDimensions.com, where they can purchase the beautiful harmonic nature soundscapes that will rejuvenate the pineal gland. Visit CodeDimensions.com and check out the different frequencies, and especially the Jewel of the Mind 936 Hertz frequency for the pineal gland. Start today and you will be thrilled with the results as I have been. I absolutely endorse this product. Go to CodeDimensions.com today. Okay, we are back. There are so many wonderful things happening right now. I want to make sure you know about our new spectacular free Law of Attraction Radio Network app on iTunes and Google Play. This is the way that you can listen to all of our radio network's number one Law of Attraction experts through your smartphone. For those of you who just want to listen to your favorite shows on the network or just to browse the archives, don't worry, we still have Stitcher.com for that. Just go to our individual show pages to click on the Stitcher.com app, and it will take you directly to our long list of archive shows. You'll be able to hear everything through your smartphone as well. We try to make listening as easy as possible for you because we truly are trying to get all of these inspirational messages of empowerment out to every corner of the world. We just think that the world needs it right now. I also want to tell you about one of the most powerful MP3s you will ever experience. It's called our Triple Powered Money Activation MP3. It has to do with me doing a hypnosis session with CodeDimensions.com, high frequency music for love and miracles. On top of all that, the phenomenal energy shifter, energy transformer, Eric Altman, has energized this entire MP3. I've been getting so many incredible responses from this. I just got an email from Dean yesterday that told me of his huge success that occurred in his business literally days of listening to this. He totally shifted from desperation to pure excitement. His exact words were, "Can't thank you, Code Dimension, and Eric enough. This has been an incredibly powerful experience." So if you want to shift into your own money attraction, go to moneyactivation.com. Then send me an email about your results. It's truly amazing. Now let's chat with a true design whisperer, and I think you're really going to love this. Lindsay Duff is more than just your average interior designer or artist. She's been creating beautiful harmonic living spaces for over 25 years using her intuitive skills as a psychic and energy reader. She really is brilliant, and I wanted to bring her on to tell people that there is a different way to shift into harmony in your current environment without moving. This is so important right now because we are being bombarded by fear and insecurity by the collective consciousness. Anywhere we go, we still feel this energy. So it's so important that we make our homes feel safe, secure, and spiritual every single day in order to keep us balanced with life. Lindsay can help us to achieve that. Welcome, Lindsay, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you, Jules. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you on because I don't think I've ever had a design whisperer on before. As a matter of fact, that's where I kind of want to start off. What is a design whisperer?
A design whisperer is a person who can read another person's energy. Like the dog whisperer, he actually can read the energy of the animals, and that's how he communicates. I can do that with individuals. As a design whisperer, would look at the person's energy field, and like, for instance, if I'm doing the house, when I'm working on your house, I'm looking at the energy field in your space. So that's what a design whisperer is. It's like most people probably wouldn't expect it, but, you know, it's working within the physical realm with the assistance of source energy and your or the people that I'm working with, non-physical guides. And I'm also a psychic and have been all my life. So when I work with my clients, what is different is when we talk on the phone, there's like this immediate connection. And I can pick up one's energy field as we talk and your desires, and I will help create a space with your assistance to look at your desired area of change in your home or your business.
Okay, so you are reading your client.
Yes.
And you are picking up what it is that they're lacking in, and it's usually something that they're desiring but they can't create. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Wow. That's so it's not like a feng shui expert that monitors or it's about the flowing of the chi. You're actually going into the person's energy.
Yes. In feng shui, feng shui, I believe, was designed, several hundred years ago, and it was more designed to give you like a roadmap,
mm-hmm,
to help you focus. And it has been very beneficial to us in the Western world since that's really not been our focus. We've learned a lot from that Eastern philosophy, and I can really appreciate it because I actually, you know, had an interest in that in my past. But no, this is different. This is actually working directly with an individual or a group, a family, for instance, and the energy is working in the moment. It's, you know, looking at the energies in the moment. So we're being present. It's not about the past. It's not about the future. It's about what needs to be done right now and where your interests and your desires lie. Where is it that you desire to have a shift, or where is it that, you know, obviously when a person calls a design whisperer, they're calling someone that's going to be able to help them do something with their spaces and environment. So my specialty is to create spaces for people to live in that matches their desires. So, you know, if you're desiring peace and joy and a place to be nurtured and somewhere to come home to that you just feel supported and loved and you're inspired and you're passionate and all that, that's what a design whisperer can do for you, is help you and assist you in shifting the energy through awareness.
Oh, interesting. Now, what if there's multiple people in the house? Are you tapping into everyone's energy in that house to make it in harmony?
Generally, what would happen in that kind of a situation was I'd have one person as the representative, and we would get I would get started with that one individual, and then once we decide, you know, what the intention of this individual is, then we could add in the people in the family. And sometimes little children, their energy is very present. So that would not be a very difficult thing to do, just to look at their spaces and I could tell. But if we had another individual, adult individual or business partners, we might want to do a conference call.
Oh, I see.
And then we just get, you know, I can tell so much about an individual just by their voice. The minute I hear their voice, then I start getting pictures. And I get pictures of, like if it was the business, for instance, I would get pictures of the business and the way it looks now, the current state of the energy, and what we could do to that energy to shift it so that it would match the intention and the desired goals of the individuals that I'm working with.
Ah, so whereas if a husband and wife were not getting along and you were talking directly to the wife, you could pick up the energy to find out what's going on in that relationship?
Well, it's always an interesting situation when it's husband and wife, or, you know, partnerships of any sort, really, but husband and wife in particular, because it is a very private thing, our energy. So I would be actually dealing with the individual originally who called me, and we would be looking at that person solely in the beginning. And then if this person felt comfortable to share this with their partner, hopefully they would, that would be the whole intention, of course, then we would bring that person, I would have a conversation with them. Because we really can't speak for another's energy. I mean, I could get permission without speaking to them individually. But in that kind of a situation, I think it would be very respectful, as I would want to be consulted in a situation like that as well.
And it always goes back to if one person is happy, then that happiness is like a ripple out effect onto another.
Yes, yes it is.
So you really need
Sometimes you wouldn't even need to have to say anything, you know. You just do your own work and then all of a sudden everybody's fine. And it's quite interesting how that works.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So business is something that everybody's working on right now. Can you have a business space within the house and still have the harmony that you need for yourself? Because I've always heard that you should have the business outside of your home. Is this true or false?
Well, you know, truth is always very
individual
thing. But from my experience and my truth is that no, there is nothing that's written in stone. It's all up to the individual. And yes, you can create a space, your business within your home, and have it be completely exclusive to your living environment just through the maybe, like, well, there's several things. Be the placement of your business, the, you know, the flow of the home or your living environment, like how you have your whole place set up. It has a lot to do with your colors, your I work with, when I start with a company or individual or a family, we work on looking for the desired intention and focus of the individuals. That is, you know, the most important thing is first and foremost. And then we would, you know, what I would get a picture of their environment. I could tell them exactly what they have in their house. But the most important thing that I'm looking at is the energy there. So if there was a lot of disharmony in the space, it would affect the business and vice versa. So we want to separate that by having everything feel relaxed and flowing, the energy flowing throughout the both spaces of work and the business. It's really not that exclusive, believe it or not. It's like if we're in harmony in our space, then we're going to be in harmony in our business, whether it's in the same place or in another. Although if we have a business outside of our home, we usually have more than one, you know, individual. So when you start getting a collective group of people as a business, then that can cause, that can be a whole nother experience. That's why I said when I do businesses, I would have, you know, people on a conference call so that we picked up everybody's, so we had a collaboration, because in business, if you have multiple partners, you want that.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And you mentioned colors. So how important are colors?
Colors are, in my experience, are paramount, because when I look at a person, 9 times out of 10 when I see a person, I see the color all around them. I see their aura. And whatever is prominent in their aura is an area that they're either in a healing mode, they're working on something, or, and all of those colors are indicative of support. So those are colors that are supportive of the individual. So yeah, colors are really important. And when I've done other, when I've had other clients that I've worked with, when I'm working another client, they, if I give them their colors that I'm seeing, those are always the colors that they love. So it's really interesting. It makes such a difference in your environment. You know, art and color and 'cause all the colors carry different forms of energy. But they're all, you know, some people say, well, yellow's this or yellow's that, but it really is exclusive to the individual.
Oh, that's important to know. Now, you actually will paint a picture for that individual. It matches their energy in what you're painting. Is that right?
That's correct. I do intuitive paintings, and it works very similar to creating an environment for you. I look at your energy and the energy of your environment and allow myself to be guided, and I do a painting that will actually enhance and support your desires and your intentions, because I do the same process. I find out the intention of the family. So if I'm doing a house, for instance, for a family, and I've already gotten all the criteria I need through just our first consultation, I can do a painting from there that will just blend in beautifully and be more support and more of a support. It would just add to everything else that you've already been creating. It would be like the icing on the cake kind of thing.
Or could that painting, with the intention already set in it, could that be like the centerpiece? Can it be?
It definitely
is what people will be drawn to automatically first?
I would say so, yeah.
Wow.
Because, yeah, you could put it in, like if you had a large room, you know, I can paint a small painting that would fit in a small space or a very large painting. It just depends on the individuals and what they desire and what we're creating. And, you know, everybody has a different, everybody's so unique. So there's really never a blanket statement for any individual.
I would just, I mean, I personally would think a great big picture above my fireplace with, you know, where everybody, where it's real colorful and everybody can see the energy. It's like, boy, that would be powerful to me.
Yeah, you know, the paintings are, what do you call, I would call them, they're kind of like a technical device because they're spiritual, but they contain the individual's energy, because that's what I paint from. I get the energy of the people or whatever I'm creating from. I'm actually collaborating with their energies and using their energies to create whatever they need. So it really isn't about me or my energy at all. I mean, of course, I have to hold the space for it.
Right.
You know, there is collaboration there, but it would, I mean, nobody would ever know that, you know, that it wasn't for, you would know that it was just exactly for this person because you would feel it when you see it.
Wow, that is so neat. I love that idea. Now, tell me, can people use existing furniture or is there times that you say, you know, replace it all? What do you do mostly, or what's the norm?
Well, I always get with, you know, we sit down and we talk about what they love. Okay, so the first thing I do is I ask people what they love about their space. You know, what do they want to keep? You know, what's their budget, number one? People need to know, you know, how much money they want to spend. So that's because that's energy. Energy, money is energy. And we look at the energy form of abundance. And then we choose the things in your home that you love. And then we set that aside. And the things that you don't love so much, we look at those and see if we need to replace them or if we can recycle or repurpose them. So there are several options. And I'm working currently on a project where the budget is lower. And she wants to keep all her furnishings. She's not crazy about everything, but we're really cleaning house. We're really getting rid of a lot of things that she doesn't like. She's willing to give up a lot of stuff, which was great because that really makes my job easier. And then with her, what we're doing is we're doing color on the walls. We're utilizing her current colors and enhancing those with pops of color that are, you know, that are complementary. And all these colors, interestingly enough, is they're complementary of the things she currently has, but they were just so buried within the whatever, the energy of not loving her space, that she didn't even realize she was already utilizing a lot of the current colors that she has in her aura. So we're actually just moving right along. It only took me like an hour and a half to really design her whole place. Just, you know, in the like a quick jot down. Of course, I have a lot more to do on that. But so we're adding lamps, we're adding rugs, we're adding curtains, we're adding color, we're adding art on her walls. Actually, we're doing a couple of intuitive paintings for her walls. And, you know, we're brightening up her place. She wants to create cheerful, happy gatherings for her family and friends. And that's what we're going to do. That's her intention.
So would you say also that it's important, I have a strong hunch it is, that when you walk into a place that what you're trying to do is declutter a lot of the stuff that people have picked up for years and years, but are afraid to let go of it?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That's always, I don't think I've ever been in a place. I mean, occasionally, a couple of times I've been in places where they're so austere, there's nothing there. But that's very, very unusual. It's usually the other way around. It's usually there's a lot of excess things sitting around that, not, number one, it makes it visually unattractive. But the big part of that is that, as we well know, most of us anyway, understand the fact that everything's energy. So inanimate objects are full of energy. And 9 times out of 10, you know, somebody made it, it was manufactured, it's an antique, it's this or that, but it has energy from others. So here we are living in a space with all of this clutter that is actually energy that weigh us down. So, you know, the whole saying of if you clean out your closet, you have room for more. It's the same thing with your home or any other space. Like if you want more abundance, you want to keep your money and your business and your books in order, and so they're not cluttered and confusing. And you'd want to do the same exact thing with your home. You want your home to feel clear and light and vibrant with your own energy. And that's one of the things that I feel is really an asset to a design whisper, is that you get to identify, you know, what you do love and want, and then we work towards making all that happen in your space. And, you know, it's like if you have a space that you feel that you've created, number one, which is very empowering, and a space that supports you and you feel loved, nurtured, inspired, and passionate about, and you want to share it with your community, you want to attract certain, you know, people into your life, you know, you might be a single individual and you want to bring in a partner, it would be very crucial to have a space that you were proud of, that you would invite a man into, that you would want them to come and feel like they were a part of your life, and vice versa. And it's really, it's kind of like, it helps you create an experience and a feeling of being empowered by your own guidance. It's like taking back your own personal power. And then your everyday life will become what you want, because what we do in our thinking and if you think about how much time we spend in our homes and our businesses, I mean, those are places that we want to have supportive, being supportive and loving and kind and fun to be in and relaxing, because that's where we spend most of our time. So we want that to be our place of empowerment.
Furniture, say you inherited furniture, does that furniture carry the energy of someone else?
Yes.
So it may not be to your best interest to keep it, but although because you inherited perhaps from a parent or something, you're less likely to give it away, but it does affect your energy.
Yeah, and you can do some things to, like if you have an antique that is from, you know, passed down through generations and you're an antique person, I mean, that's a more difficult thing to deal with when you have a lot of antiques, because they are, you know, carrying the energy of others. You can do house clearings, and I do that, and I've done that for many years, and I have cleared a lot of places.
What does that consist of?
A house clearing is coming into a space. I usually sit, you know, in a meditative state with the people who own the house with me, and we all sit in a space and just get into that meditative space, just kind of quiet our mind and just become present. And then it just starts coming up, and I look and I can see where the energy is stagnant, where there's lots of inanimate energy that's weighing the house down, where there might be mold in your house, there might be, you know, water under the floors, or there's all kinds of things that show up. So it's a service. I mean, it is usually a part of what I do when I do an environment, because it's just kind of a natural outpouring of looking at the energy in a space.
Interesting. Very interesting. So I do hear that when people, you know, move into a new home, it's always important to clear out the old energy and to bring in that beautiful new energy.
Absolutely. It really is important to do that.
And so how long does that take to do? Is it like an hour, 2 hours, or?
Yeah, it's usually, if it's a really large place, it might take an hour and a half, but usually it's an hour, an hour and 15 minutes, somewhere in there. Not very long.
Wow, that I would think that that would be important, especially you never know what happened in the previous energy if somebody was sick or the people had a divorce or there was lack of love or lack of harmony. Boy, I could see where that would be important.
Very.
Because the energy does stay with an object. And we even know from our radio shows when we do energy healing, the energy stays within the broadcast. So you can see where it would stay on the objects.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, if you're like in a partnership for a long time and you decide to end the partnership and you have a bed that you slept together in for many years, it's a pretty common practice in that just that one area specifically, because it's such a, you know, that's where such a connection occurs when you sleep with a person, that, you know,
you
generally
get a new bed.
You want to get a new bed. Yeah, you just want to get a new bed. Otherwise, you're going to, you know, you're going to feel like you're sleeping with that person. Because you really are, you know. And then to invite another person into that space would almost be like, I don't know, be weird, you know.
Yeah, that's funny. I've never thought of that.
Yes.
This is great. Good information. Now, how can people contact you?
They can contact me through my website, and that is www.lindsayduff.com.
And let's spell Lindsay because it's not the normal way.
It's Lindsay.
Sayduff.
Like Frank, yeah.
.com.
Uh-huh. And I have a mailing list there, and I have a lot of social media, so you can pretty much find everything there. I'm constantly updating my site. So there's always, I have newsletters and that go out, and my phone number is 760-500-5633. And, you know, I just wanted to say kind of to close up that, you know, the spaces that we create become places where we feel supported and loved, you know, after you have an experience like this. And this is a place that we want to go to for nurturing and comfort, quietude, focus, rejuvenation, clarity, and connection with our most powerful parts of ourselves. So, you know, it's such a uplifting and fun experience to have a new place to live in. It's almost like you built a new house and you get to come home to this new house, but you have only done such a small part of, I mean, building a house is a whole nother story. You know, I used to do that too, build houses and do all the interior designs for those. So, that's joyful and fun. But to be able to have a similar outcome by working with your energy is just really remarkable.
Right.
I think it's so much fun.
Right. Well, that is really, really interesting, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have more questions that they want to contact you and ask you directly, and you'll give them consultations on their house. And you don't have to be, I mean, you're located in the San Diego area,
yeah,
but you don't have to be in San Diego. You can be anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. I can do it, yeah, I can do it over the phone and Skype, and then if we decide to work together, you can send me photos or videos. We can do it on Skype. We can do video. We can do photos. I mean, we don't even really need videos and photos. But after we have our initial consultation, when I, you know, look at the house and give you the information, the energy information that you need, then it's nice to see it because I am a visual. because I'm an artist, so I'm very visual.
Oh, good. Okay. I love this, and I'm going to strongly urge all my listeners that, one, the most important thing is for you to get happy, for you to get to feel good, and for you to get empowered. And the way to do that is to spruce up your home. And with Lindsay's insight, you can get that done. So I hope you'll give her a call, because it's just real right now, it's the most important thing for us all to get into a better feeling place. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on and sharing all of this valuable information with all our listeners.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Jewel. Thank you so much for having me.
Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the law of attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
Now let's bring on Thomas J. Carey, who holds a master's degree in anthropology and is an Air Force veteran who held a top secret security clearance. He has spent the last 22 years investigating the Roswell incident and has appeared on many radio shows and TV shows, such as Coast to Coast with George Norrie. Welcome, Thomas, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Jules. Glad to be with you today.
So let's start at the beginning, though. There have been many books that have been written about Area 51. Why did you feel that another book on this subject was warranted?
Good question. You're correct. There have been a lot of books written about Area 51. There's also have been a lot of documentaries on, especially cable channels, about Area 51, and it's probably next to Roswell the best known term or word, in this case I guess it's two words, regarding the UFOs phenomenon in the world. It's Roswell is the best known, and I think Area 51 is right up there. So we felt that the book is actually not about the Area 51 that everybody knows in Nevada. It's about the original Area 51, which was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. And we say that because Area 51, as you know, really started, it was the base in Nevada. It's on the northeastern corner of what used to be the Atomic Test Range and the Nellis Test Range in Nevada, in the desert, right next to Groom Lake. Well, that location was actually constructed in 1955, okay? Most people don't know that it was constructed to develop and test United States spy planes. Well, Area 51 got into the lexicon in the late 1980s when a fellow named Bob Lazar came forward and said that, yes, he worked at a super secret part of Area 51 known as S4, where he worked on alien technology. And by alien, he didn't mean they were from another country. He meant that they were from another planet somewhere in the universe. And that's when Area 51 became known. So if you mention the term Area 51 to anybody, they will think of aliens first. Either alien flying saucers or alien bodies might be stored there. That's what they're thinking of. They're not thinking of the U-2 or the SR-71 or the stealth aircraft. So what we wanted to do was write a book about that combined Roswell. We've written two books about Roswell, both bestsellers, but our book, Witness to Roswell, like all the other Roswell books, and there are over 100 of them, they all leave off, the story ends when the wreckage and the bodies are dropped off or transported to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. And that's where the story ends. So we really wanted to pick up the story there to move forward as to what happened to all of that stuff after it was delivered to Wright-Patterson. So where Roswell leaves off, our book, Area, the real Area 51, meaning Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, begins.
Okay, so let me ask you a question then. So the Roswell story happened in New Mexico, correct?
Correct.
And the original Area 51 was in Nevada, but the bodies from Roswell, the alien bodies, were actually sent to the Wright-Patterson in Ohio.
And the wreckage, too. Because,
and the wreckage, the aircraft wreckage.
Yes, the flying saucer wreckage, and the bodies were sent to Wright-Patterson because Area 51 didn't exist until another, this is 1947, for another 8 years. Area 51 wasn't actually built until 1955. In 47, Wright-Patterson was the most secret, the most technologically advanced Air Force Base in our inventory. And
actually the oldest, since that's where the Wright brothers
yes.
started their flying.
Exactly. Northeast of Dayton, Ohio, the two Wright brothers selected the plane just outside of Dayton, Ohio to make their airstrip to further develop their flying machine, as it was called back then. And the base was actually, the strip was taken over by the military in 1917 with the advent of the United States entry into World War I, and it's been a military facility ever since.
Interesting. Wow, very interesting. So what about Hangar 18? Is there or was there ever such a hangar at Wright-Patterson?
That is an excellent question. That is the most frequently asked question about Wright-Patterson. If anybody's heard about Wright-Patterson, the first question is there really a Hangar 18? And the answer, equivocal answer is yes and no. And I say that because if you go to Wright-Patterson today, say you take a trip there today and you go up to the information desk, and you say, can you direct me to Hangar 18? Show me where it's at. The person there is trained to say, no, there is no Hangar 18, and there never was. Well, they are absolutely correct. There never was a Hangar 18 at Wright-Patterson. What there was and what there still is a Building 18, but they won't tell you that, see? They know what you're asking about, but they won't tell you. They play word games with
you. Now, is that where the alien bodies were, or are they still stored there?
They're no longer stored there, Jules. They were stored from the day that they arrived from Roswell in July of 1947. For another 35 years, along about 1982, 83, we believe they were moved to Area 51. And we also believe they're no longer at Area 51, but they've been dispersed to various locations, military facilities around the country.
Are you talking live or dead bodies of aliens?
Well, they're all dead now.
Okay.
But at the time of the Roswell crash, one was still alive. There
wow.
was still alive. The stories we get are varied, and the one that makes the most sense to us said that it died in 1952 of they were conducting some experiment on it, and it expired. Now, one of the witnesses went so far as to say, we killed it. He said, we killed it. Mm-hmm. And by that he meant it was killed in an experiment. So that's the most believable story that we have.
Now, are these aliens, did they look like those movies that we saw? They're short and And there was a documentary about doing an autopsy. Is that what the aliens look like?
Well, the documentary that you're talking about, the Alien Autopsy, which was run by Fox in 1995, I believe. You can just throw that one away. That whole thing was a hoax.
Really? Okay, good.
That was a hoax. The descriptions that we have gotten, and there are many that have told us about the one that was still alive, plus the ones that they saw that were dead, are all pretty consistent. We're talking about a being that's about 3.5 to 4 feet tall, and the overriding physical feature that has been described to us is the oversized head. If you can take a pear and turn it upside down to where the pointed part of the pear is pointing down, you pretty much have the shape of the head.
Wow.
of the Roswell alien, but it was much larger. It was bigger than its small frame. It weighed maybe 30 to 50 pounds with this oversized head.
Wow.
It had long arms and no nose, just two little holes in the front of the, where the nose would be. It has two little holes, and then two holes where the ears would be, and no ear flap, no hair. It had wide, deep-set eyes, and they didn't call them aliens back in 1947. They just referred to them, the witnesses, especially the civilians, just referred to them as little people. They were grayish blue in color, grayish green, grayish orange. It depended, we believe, on the state of the decay, because they were apparently decaying rapidly. And the variances in coloration that we've been told most likely has to do with two things: the state of the decay and the lighting conditions under which the witness saw them. But that's pretty much the description of them. Oh, and they had a little 1-inch slit for a mouth. And the mouth didn't go anywhere. Like our mouth, you know, we use for, besides talking and smiling, we use to ingest food. Well, the oral cavity in these creatures was just a cavity that didn't go anywhere.
Huh.
So they didn't eat food as we know it. They had to get food some other way. And I can't, you know, I don't know. I don't have that information. But the oral cavity just was like a remnant. It didn't go anywhere.
Interesting. Was there female, male?
No. There was no sex discerned.
Interesting. I wonder if they got their nourishment from the sun.
They could probably. It had to be absorbed, you know,
mm-hmm.
something like osmosis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the sun. Maybe they had special tablets, you know, that melted, you know, if they put them in that oral cavity, maybe they melted or something and then diffused through a membrane or something like that. But they had to get sustenance somewhere, right?
Right. So how long did the live ones stay in captivity? It was, four years?
From 1947 to 1952, which is 5 years.
Wow.
Yes, 5 years.
Wow. And so let me ask you, why hide this information from the people?
Well, that is a two-phased question. The first one is, back in 1947, the late 40s, when this wreckage was discovered and recovered, there were very good reasons to keep it secret. The Cold War was just beginning, and at first our military thought the device could have been Russian origin. But when they found the bodies, they realized, this isn't Russian. This isn't anything from this planet. But yet they had this technology that they didn't want to share, you know, because we're in competition now with the Russians, basically. And I like the statement that one of the Roswell officers made Major Patrick Saunders as to when we interviewed him, we said, you know, why the cover-up? And he just said, well, we were faced with a technology greater than our own, and we didn't know what their intentions were. So it was a mystery to them. And having been in the military myself, I know if there's a, you know, a mystery or something they don't know, they don't tell the world that about it. They just cover it up until they get an answer. Well, in this case, they didn't have an answer for what they had just recovered, and they didn't want to admit that they could not that the Air Force's mission, which is to control our airspace, that they couldn't control our airspace when it comes to these UFOs. They, you know, they could just fly about at their own time and place and their under, you know, in their own discretion, and we couldn't do anything about it. So they didn't. Air Force didn't want to admit that. You know, back then they called the aliens Martians. Besides little people, the other term for them were Martians. They said, boy, if we tell them the Martians are here, they might panic, just like just like in 1938. And the other thing was that the thought that maybe our financial and religious institutions would collapse with the knowledge that we were not alone in the universe. So those things were all going around in 1947. Well, why is it still covered up today?
Yeah.
That's a harder question to answer, and I can only speculate. Speculation number one is that they still don't have the answer to it. And if you still don't have the answer to it, you don't admit that. So they cover it up because they haven't figured it out yet.
Interesting.
The other speculation is that it's one of inertia. It's always been covered up, so let's not rock the boat. I'm not going to be the one to cause waves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of inertia. It's always been covered up. I don't have the wherewithal to start making waves. It might affect my career, blah, 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 blah. So they just, you know, nobody has the will to do anything.
Right.
And also there's no public mandate. The people aren't marching on the White House or the Senate or the Congress to, you know, find out where this stuff is.
Well, actually, I think that there are people who are doing that now. They're demanding Congress release the information, but we don't know for sure if there's ever been another crash. Is that correct? But there has been sightings of these lights above the White House at one particular time. Yes. Tell us about that.
Well, that was in 1952, Jules. It's called the Washington, D.C. sightings, where on two weekends in July of 1952, it's as though the flying saucers zeroed in on the White House. They and that's, you know, restricted airspace. You know, you can't fly over the White House. These things were just flying back and forth with impunity over the White House and the Capitol. And they have photographs of them. Jets were scrambled from Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C. And there were radar sightings from the ground, and there were visual sightings from the fighter pilots that went to intercept them. And the fighter pilots, every time they would approach there, the UFOs would disappear, except in one case, they surrounded this one pilot in his fighter jet, and he was recorded on the, you know, audio tape that he says, I see them, I'm surrounded, what do I do? And fortunately they broke off, and but there are stories that a couple of fighter jets were lost at that in that incident, you know, those sightings, the DC sightings. And this was front page news all over the U.S., these sightings over Washington, D.C. in 1952. It knocked the Democratic National Presidential Convention off the front pages, which I'm sure they like that. But they were front page news all over the country. And they were, it's among the, I would say, among the top five UFO sightings because you have radar visual sightings and a lot of people involved.
There are many sightings today from all over the world, and maybe it's because of the internet that we're able to see what's going on with these sightings. Do you ever anticipate that we are going to establish contact where it's going to be less of a secret? Maybe we're going to have dialogue with them?
Well, I'm speculating now that somewhere between 1947 and the present, someone, maybe not in an official category, has had, in fact, I know there has been dialogue with them in 1947 in the Roswell case, and but I don't know that if there's been anything official. There may have been, but the government is not saying. There have been rumors about the 1964 meeting, of an alleged meeting at Alamogordo, New Mexico, between the extraterrestrials and President, who was President in 64? That was Johnson. And there was also a rumor that Dwight Eisenhower in 1952 went to Palm Springs to meet with them. But I'm sure that there have been individual encounters, let's say. And I'm not talking about abductions. I'm just talking about nuts and bolts encounters where there was a dialogue. And I'll give you one example that I do know of. At the time of the Roswell crash, one of the first people at the site, at the crash site, was a Roswell fireman. Because the people that discovered the remains of the ship phoned into the sheriff in Roswell, thinking that it was just the crash of a light plane. Now you can imagine Roswell, 7 miles south of the town, is this big air base, Roswell Army Airfield, and they have nuclear weapons there. The only strike force in the world for any country that had nuclear weapons was at Roswell. Fireman Dan Dwyer, he was a crew chief. He thought it was a crash of a light plane. So he takes the tanker out. The tanker is simply a pickup truck with a big water tank on the back. So he heads out to the crash site about 30 miles north of Roswell, and 3 miles off Highway 285. So he gets there, and the site is pristine. The military hadn't gotten there yet. The sheriff hadn't gotten there yet. The only ones that were there were the archaeologists who had found it. And he's immediately drawn not to the wreckage, but to the bodies. He sees three bodies on the ground. And he's just drawn to the body. He's walking towards the body, looking at the bodies, when out of the corner of his eye, he sees movement, not from where the bodies are, but from the side of, out the corner of his eye. And here, one of them is walking around. One of the alien creatures is walking around, still alive. And his family tells us the story, because Dan Dwyer was dead before we, got onto the case. But we get this from his wife and his daughter. And he gets home that evening, and the family can tell he's very disturbed. And they say, Daddy, what's the matter? And he says, something happened today. I'm just very disturbed. There was a crash of a flying saucer, is what they called them back then. And there were little people. He called them creatures. And, well, was any of them alive? Yes, one was alive. Did you talk to it? Yes, we did talk to one another, but we didn't talk like we talk by moving our lips and mouths, and we didn't talk like that. We talked to one another in our heads.
Wow.
And we would call that, I guess, mental telepathy today, right?
Right.
He says, we talked to one another in our heads. Well, what did it say, Daddy? What did it say? It said, it told me, don't worry about me. Don't concern yourself with me. I accept my fate and the fate of my comrades. There's nothing anybody can do. Our craft is destroyed, and there's nothing you can do. Be calm. Don't worry about me or us. And that was the gist of his the conversation.
In other words, he was saying that you don't have the technology to get us home, so we know that we're stuck here.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Interesting.
And there's also stories that they came to look for them. Yes, we have stories that there were craft sighted over the crash site late at night. You know, if you remember from the movie Close Encounters, in the very beginning of the movie, where you see this beam of light being shot, you know, shown down from above onto the ground, where this craft was searching for something, beam of light, and that's what they saw. Several craft a day or two after the crash, shining down blue lights onto the ground, as if they, you know, speculating that they were looking for their lost comrades. And a day or two later, we know from a witness who was sitting outside the hangar on the Roswell Air Base, where all this stuff was taken, including the bodies, that he was sitting out there on a smoke break, and there, right overhead, right over the hangar, were these three flying saucers just sitting up there, as if, oh, they found where they were, their comrades were, and they were paying their last respects. So that's speculating, but that, you know, anthropomorphizing, as we do, giving human thought and qualities to something else, that's what we think, speculating they might have been doing, paying their last respects.
Wow, interesting. Really fascinating. Now, Roswell was close to the nuclear site, the military installation for the nuclear site. So today we've heard stories about some ETs actually preventing nuclear blasts from occurring. Do you think that they're attracted? Do you think that there's a chance that they could be trying to stop us from, you know?
Well, here's the thing, Jules. In 1947, all of a sudden, the UFOs appeared. First, starting in late June of 47, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the modern era of UFOs would burst upon us.
Right.
Now, if you look at that, well, why June of 40, you know, why 1947? Well, World War II had just ended with the detonation of the first two nuclear devices over Japan.
Right.
And nuclear testing went forward in Nevada, in New Mexico, starting, you know, after the war ended. We had the V-2 rocket tests in New Mexico. We had the Los Alamos Atomic Laboratory and the Sandia Atomic Weapons Base. So one could easily speculate that it was the nuclear detonations, the discovery of nuclear fission and fusion, that might have attracted them. Again, I emphasize this is speculation.
Right.
And certainly they didn't stop the so-called aliens did not stop nuclear detonations. We ultimately stopped them on our own because of fear of contamination, of the planet, and fear of destroying mankind. So I don't know that... you know, there are all sorts of stories that they're benevolent. Well, they're certainly not hostile, because if they were hostile, they would have already taken over.
Oh, true, true. That's true.
So it's really a puzzle, Jules, as to what they are doing. I'm not into abductions myself. I'm more of a nuts and bolts investigator. But that certainly could be possible. Anything is possible, at least in my mind, as to why they are here.
I'm just wondering right now, because we're under the threat of another nuclear World War III, that they could be coming into focus a little bit more right now as well. And hopefully, if there's anybody going to prevent that, they will.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that with all of the technology today, the video cameras, you know, everybody's got a little handheld. There's more footage, videotape, not so much photographic camera, you know, like the 8mm or 16mm anymore, but mostly the video of things.
From the cell phones, yeah.
From the cell phones flitting around the skies. I will have to tell you, I am disappointed that there aren't more clear, close-up, closer images of physical craft.
You know, I agree with you. It seems like in this day and age, there should be clear pictures.
Yes. Instead, you get these, I get emails from various sources, and one of them said, a clear image of a UFO over wherever it was. So as I clicked on it, and it was just a squiggly line. I mean, that could be a handheld camera that when you take a picture of a dot and it's handheld, your hand moves and it creates a squiggly line. I'm thinking, my goodness, this is what we get.
Right.
So I am disappointed that there aren't any really clear photos of or videos of something that you can say is a nuts and bolts craft.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are turn out to be hoaxes in most cases.
Right. Well, I do want to tell everybody about your fascinating book, Inside the Real Area 51, The Secret History of the Wright-Patterson. You know, you have got so much documentation in here with people and pictures of the people that you've talked to, all of how they were involved. You even got Donald Rumsfeld. You've got everybody in here. It's absolutely well backed up with all of the information, and some of it was like, wow, I was totally surprised. There is so much really great, tremendous information. I hope everybody runs out and get it. It seems like right now we are awakening to all these things, and I noticed that every country is putting things out on the line saying, yeah, let's talk about it. Even the Pope is willing to put out information, and still in the U.S. we're still pretty guarded about it.
Yes, the everybody looks to the U.S. for basically everything, you know. Unfortunately, the U.S., the saying is the lid is down. The lid is still down on UFOs in the U.S. And you're right, other countries seem to be more forthcoming. France, some of the other European countries, Italy, the Pope, some of the bishops, some of the countries in South America. But the U.S., and I understand why, is because in the U.S., there's the term UFO, flying saucer, aliens, that sort of stuff, to professional people. And by professional people, I mean people who are in the limelight, public people, doctors, lawyers, politicians, people who depend for their livelihood on their perceived credibility.
Mm-hmm.
They do not want their name in the same sentence as the term UFO.
Right.
It goes back to the 1950s when you had the so-called contactee phenomenon. Do you know about the contactees? The contactees. Now, you know, you had the flying saucers burst on the scene in 1947. Well, starting in the mid 1950s, you had these people that claimed that they were in contact with our space brothers. And they were benevolent. They were going to save the world. And the Space Brothers were always like Nordic types with blonde hair, you know. And They would claim that they were just back from the planet Mercury or Neptune. They had that they'd been given a trip around the solar system by their space brothers. These people were clearly wackos, you know, but they became very popular with quite a large number of people because they had they were on a messianic mission, because they knew the Space Brothers. And so it was just a golden opportunity for the media to really rip the whole phenomenon of UFOs because of these dopes.
Right.
I'm trying to think. George Adamski was one of them.
Well, there's still lots of them today, too. There's still lots of them that say that they're channeling information from, and it could be true. There's no way that we can know it, but a lot of it doesn't make any sense.
But these people so contaminated the flying saucer or the extraterrestrial phenomenon back in the mid-50s, we're still paying a price for it.
Right.
Because whenever the mainstream media talks about UFOs, it's tongue-in-cheek all the time.
It really is.
Tongue-in-cheek. And to get a really good UFO documentaries, you have to go to cable TV.
Right.
Where I think UFOs and sharks are the most popular item on cable TV. So
yeah, I know. But one positive thing, Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, he is really very, very vocal about that we need to start talking about UFOs, because I guess while he was out in space, he saw a couple of them.
Yes, and also Edgar Mitchell was from Roswell. I didn't know that. I met Edgar Mitchell. He wrote the foreword to our Witness to Roswell book, and I met him, I'd say, 4 years ago down in Roswell. And what he said was that after he got back from space and he started making the rounds of the country, you know, talking about his trip into space, to the moon, I think it was Apollo 14.
Mm-hmm.
When he got back to Roswell, people he knew, because he was from Roswell, people he knew started telling him almost in whispered tones about the Roswell incident. They had been so scared because they were threatened with their lives back in 1947. They were just then starting to come forward. And people he knew and trusted were all telling him about this crash in 1947. So that's where he picked up the story. And since then, he says he's talked to people in the government who knew. He's seen documents and secret documents, and that he can tell tell the people without equivocation that the Roswell crash absolutely did happen, and it was an extraterrestrial craft. So it was because the people trusted him, having been an astronaut. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got a doctorate from MIT. He was a Navy pilot and an astronaut. I mean, pretty good credentials.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant.
But he is a great guy, and he was originally from Roswell. I think he spent part of his time in Artesia, New Mexico, but he knew a lot of people in and around Roswell who trusted him with the story, and that's how he got to know about the Roswell crash.
Mm, that's fascinating. Well, we are all out of time, but again, if you really want to read a fascinating book that you're not going to be able to put down, you want to get Inside the Real Area 51, The Secret History of Wright Patterson. Brilliant book. Thank you, Tom. It's just really refreshing to hear so much scientific documentation behind a book, and you did a fabulous job, you and your partner, Donald Smith.
Well, for Don and myself, Jules, I thank you. It's been my distinct pleasure to be with you today.
Well, thank you, and with your next book, I hope you'll come back on and give us some more insight.
We certainly will.
All right. Terrific. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com and have a great week.